Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, Anne Ball brings us Ask a Teacher. We also will hear the American short story, The Black Cat, by Edgar Allan Poe. But first, here's Susan Shand.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has won the Nobel Peace Prize in recognition of his efforts to end his country's border conflict with Eritrea. The Norwegian Nobel Institute made the announcement on Friday. It also praised the important reforms that Abiy has launched in Ethiopia since becoming prime minister 18 months ago. The prize comes as Abiy is facing pressure to defend the reforms he announced. Critics warn that his ability to deal with rising unrest in his country may be weakening. The Nobel Committee said some people may consider it too early to give him the Peace Prize, but added it is now that Abiy Ahmed's efforts need recognition. By choosing him, the committee showed its desire to give the award to individuals whose efforts need encouragement. Reacting to the announcement, the 43-year-old leader said he was humbled. In a call with the Nobel Committee, he explained his hope that the award would influence other African leaders to work on the peace-building process on our continent. Abiy Ahmed took office after large protests pressured the old ruling coalition and hurt one of the world's fastest-growing economies. Africa's youngest leader quickly announced extensive reforms. He surprised people by accepting a peace deal, ending a 20-year border war between Ethiopia and Eritrea. Tens of thousands of people died in the conflict. The two East African nations had not had diplomatic ties since the war began in 1998. Abiy once fought in a town that remained disputed at the time he accepted the peace deal. Within weeks, the president of Eritrea, Isaias Afwerki, visited the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Communications and transport links were re-established. Families that had been divided for 20 years were reunited. The improving relations led the United Nations to remove sanctions on Eritrea. Ethiopia's reforms, however, do not seem to have led to changes in Eritrea. It remains a closed state and has closed the border with Ethiopia. The Nobel Committee pointed to Abiy's other diplomatic efforts in East Africa. He has tried to ease tensions between Eritrea and Djibouti and between Kenya and Somalia. He has also reached out to different sides in Sudan. Ethiopia is Africa's second most populous nation, with about 110 million people. Eritrea gained independence from Ethiopia in 1993 after a 30-year guerrilla war. About 80,000 people died in a war between the two sides from 1998 to 2000. The Nobel Committee noted that peace does not arise from the actions of one party alone. It said that when Abiy reached out his hand, President Afwerki grasped it and helped to formalize the peace process between the two countries. The committee added that it hopes the peace agreement will help to bring about positive change for the entire populations of Ethiopia and Eritrea. Reacting to the Nobel Committee's decision, Eritrea's ambassador to Japan offered congratulations, adding, "Tears have won again over evil." Leaders in Africa, including those of Liberia, Ghana, and neighboring Somalia, reacted with praise and encouragement. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the winds of hope are blowing ever stronger across Africa. The United States Embassy in Ethiopia joined in the congratulations, noting the progress made under Abiy. At home, the new prime minister offered one political surprise after another. He released tens of thousands of prisoners and welcomed home once banned political groups. He announced that Ethiopia would hold free and fair elections in 2020. For the first time, the country had no journalists in prison, media groups noted last year. The prime minister also announced the opening up of Ethiopia's economy. He said private investment would be welcome in major state-owned businesses. The process continues slowly. As Abiy enjoyed praise overseas, problems began in Ethiopia, mostly among different ethnic groups. Unrest has been an issue as formerly oppressed groups find they can freely demonstrate. Some observers warn that the unrest will grow in the months leading up to the elections next year. I'm Susan Shand.
Before she could even talk, Ellie Heath spent hours drawing pictures. When she grew older, the 15-year-old discovered the joy of sewing. She says she finds it calming. She started out making small objects like jewelry and soft playthings. Over time, she began making clothing. Her love of the creative work led her to open a business. Three Blue Bunnies is the name of her company, which makes what she calls wearable art. My definition of wearable art is something that makes you feel unique. It's one of a kind, often handmade, she explains. She sells her creations in farmers markets, at sales for local churches, and other places. All the pieces Ellie creates are made of used or donated fabrics. She says there are 21 billion tons of cloth material in waste landfills in the United States. The teenager hopes to reduce that amount through her work. She works a lot with jean jackets, renewing them with artistic additions. The process starts with finding cloth material that looks good with the jackets. Then I find out the design that works on it through trial and error, or maybe just the design comes to me, she explains. Ellie credits her mother for pushing her children to develop their artistic skills. My mom has always been a huge supporter of the arts, she says. She's always given us this place to express our creativity. Ellie's mom, Amy Heath, is a former school art teacher. She says creativity feeds kids' brains. I think it's very important for children to have as many opportunities as possible and be inspired by as many objects and people, Heath says. She praises Ellie's membership in the local business alliance in Maryland, where they live. So she's getting ideas and experiences through other businesses, Heath says. Ellie sharpened her creative skills at school. Cheryl Crow was one of her teachers early on. Crow calls Ellie a dream student. She says Ellie worked hard and was always very creative, but also very kind, helpful to the other students. Students learned the basic sewing skills in Crow's class. Over the last 3 years, Ellie has created clothing for theatrical productions at Severna Park High School. Last year, Ellie designed several pieces for actors to wear in the school musical Mamma Mia. Angela Germanos is the school's theater director. The department is putting on Cinderella this year. She says there will be a tricky clothing change performed in the play in front of theatergoers. This will be a big challenge for Ellie, she says. Ellie has many dreams. She wants to be a teacher and to spread the joy of creativity among children. She also dreams her business will grow and become a model for other young people who have a dream they want to come true.
Many Americans are talking about a really big animal from the northern state of Alaska. Katmai National Park and Preserve announced this week that a wild grizzly bear named Holly was its champion of Fat Bear Week 2019. Fat Bear Week for Alaska's grizzlies has become a national internet sensation. People vote for individual bears in an online voting competition. Katmai, in southwestern Alaska, is famous for its brown bears. The animals grow to massive sizes by eating large amounts of salmon. The fish are native to the area's waterways. The Reuters news agency reports that Holly, who did not have cubs this year, had a big finish to the season. She's just a great bear. When she doesn't have cubs, she looks like the Michelin Man, said Naomi Boak, who organized the Fat Bear Week event this year. Boak works as a media ranger for Katmai Conservancy, a nonprofit group. Fat Bear Week combines humor with science education. It tells about the Katmai bears as they prepare for hibernation. Bears usually lose about a third of their body weight during their winter sleep. The body fat they develop in summer and autumn is important for their survival. Thanks to Katmai's plentiful supply of food, the park's male bears can grow to more than 450 kilograms before they go to their hibernation dens. Females grow to about two-thirds that weight. Even before the latest Fat Bear Week, Holly was well known to people who follow and love Alaska wildlife. Millions of people have watched her in videos captured by the Bear Cam at Brooks Falls. In 2014, the United States National Park Service published a story about Holly. It told how she took care of a cub that had been abandoned by its mother. Such an adoption is very, very unusual among brown bears, Boak said. Holly's adoption of the year-old cub led Bear Cam followers to call her Supermom. I'm John Russell.
Today, we answer a question from Alan in China. He writes, I know that people always say, certainly, or of course. So what's the difference? Thank you, Alan. Dear Alan, thank you for writing to us. The expressions, certainly, and of course, are similar in meaning. What is different is how you use them and with whom. By definition, the word certainly means that you know something for sure. This is the more formal or official sounding of the two words. In a world that is becoming more socially informal, you are less likely to use the word certainly. But here is an example. You are in a meeting with your supervisor at work. She says to you, do you think you can have your report ready by next Friday? You may answer, yes, certainly. It will be ready by then. There is no question in your mind, the report will be ready. Now we turn to the term, of course. It is defined this way, used informally to give permission or say yes in a way that shows you are very certain. You are more likely to use of course when speaking with friends. For example, your friend Tom asks, do you want to go to the party with me Saturday night? You may answer, of course, I'd love to go. Sounds fun. Other similar words you can use are sure and all right. Sure leaves no question in anyone's mind. Let's go to the beach for the weekend. Sure, that would be great. The words all right mean that you agree with what someone said. The difference is you can use this term if you are not happy about it. Here is an example. Can you help me finish my work? All right, but only for an hour. You can use it like the term, okay. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Ann Ball.
The Black Cat. Tomorrow I die. Tomorrow I die. And today I want to tell the world what happened, and thus perhaps free my soul from the horrible weight which lies upon it. But listen. Listen, and you shall hear how I have been destroyed. When I was a child, I had a natural goodness of soul which led me to love animals, all kinds of animals, but especially those animals we call pets, animals which have learned to live with men and share their homes with them. There is something in the love of these animals which speaks directly to the heart of the man who has learned from experience how uncertain and changeable is the love of other men. I was quite young when I married. You will understand the joy I felt to find that my wife shared with me my love for animals. Quickly she got for us several pets of the most likable kind. We had birds, some goldfish, a fine dog, and a cat. The cat was a beautiful animal, of unusually large size and entirely black. I named the cat Pluto, and it was the pet I liked best. I alone fed it, and it followed me all around the house. It was even with difficulty that I stopped it from following me through the streets. Our friendship lasted in this manner for several years, during which, however, my own character became greatly changed. I began to drink too much wine and other strong drinks. As the days passed, I became less loving in my manner. I became quick to anger. I forgot how to smile and laugh. My wife, yes, and my pets too, all except the cat, were made to feel the change in my character. One night I came home quite late from the inn where I now spent more and more time drinking. Walking with uncertain step, I made my way with effort into the house. As I entered, I saw, or thought I saw, that Pluto the cat was trying to stay out of my way, to avoid me. This action by an animal which I had thought still loved me made me angry beyond reason. My soul seemed to fly from my body. I took a small knife out of my coat and opened it. Then I took the poor animal by the neck, and with one quick movement I cut out one of its fear-filled eyes. Slowly the cat got well. The hole where its eye had been was not a pretty thing to look at, it's true, but the cat no longer appeared to suffer any pain. As might be expected, however, it ran from me in fear whenever I came near. Why should it not run? Yet this did not fail to anger me. I felt growing inside myself a new feeling. Who has not 100 times found himself doing wrong, some evil thing, for no other reason than because he knows he should not? Are not we humans at all times pushed, ever driven in some unknown way, to break the law just because we understand it to be the law? One day, in cold blood, I tied a strong rope around the cat's neck, and taking it down to the cellar under the house, I hung it from one of the wood beams above my head. I hung it there until it was dead. I hung it there with tears in my eyes. I hung it there because I knew it had loved me, because I felt it had given me no reason to hurt it, because I knew that my doing so was a wrong so great, a sin so deadly, that it would place my soul forever outside the reach of the love of God. That same night, as I lay sleeping, I heard through my open window the cries of our neighbors. I jumped from my bed and found that the entire house was filled with fire. It was only with great difficulty that my wife and I escaped. And when we were out of the house, all we could do was stand and watch it burn to the ground. I thought of the cat as I watched it burn, the cat whose dead body I had left hanging in the cellar. It seemed almost that the cat had, in some mysterious way, caused the house to burn, so that it could make me pay for my evil act, so that it could take revenge upon me. Months went by, and I could not drive the thought of the cat out of my mind. One night I sat in the inn drinking as usual. In the corner I saw a dark object that I had not seen before. I went over to see what it could be. It was a cat. A cat almost exactly like Pluto. I touched it with my hand and petted it, passing my hand softly along its back. The cat rose and pushed its back against my hand. Suddenly, I realized that I wanted the cat. I offered to buy it from the innkeeper, but he claimed he had never seen the animal before. As I left the inn, it followed me, and I allowed it to do so. It soon became a pet of both my wife and myself. The morning after I brought it home, however, I discovered that this cat, like Pluto, had only one eye. How was it possible that I had not noticed this the night before? This fact only made my wife love the cat even more, but I myself found a feeling of dislike growing in me. My growing dislike of the animal only seemed to increase its love for me. It followed me everywhere, always. When I sat, it lay down under my chair. When I stood up, it got between my feet and nearly made me fall. Wherever I went, it was always there. At night, I dreamed of it, and I began to hate that cat. One day, my wife called to me from the cellar of the old building where we were now forced to live. As I went down the stairs, the cat, following me as always, ran under my feet and nearly threw me down. In sudden anger, I took a knife and struck wildly at the cat. Quickly my wife put out her hand and stopped my arm. This only increased my anger, and without thinking, I turned and put the knife's point deep into her heart, and she fell to the floor and died without a sound. I spent a few moments looking for the cat, but it was gone. And I had other things to do, for I knew I must do something with the body, and quickly. Suddenly I noted a place in the wall of the cellar, where stones had been added to the wall to cover an old fireplace which was no longer wanted. The walls were not very strongly built, and I found I could easily take down those stones. Behind them there was, as I knew there must be, a hole just big enough to hold the body. With much effort, I put the body in and carefully put the stones back in their place. I was pleased to see that it was quite impossible for anyone to know that a single stone had been moved. Days passed. Still there was no cat. A few people came and asked about my wife, but I answered them easily. Then one day several officers of the police came. Certain that they would find nothing, I asked them in and went with them as they searched. Finally they searched the cellar from end to end. I watched them quietly, and as I expected, they noticed nothing. But as they started up the stairs again, I felt myself driven by some unknown inner force to let them know, to make them know, that I had won the battle. The walls of this building, I said, are very strongly built. It is a fine old house. And as I spoke, I struck with my stick the very place in the wall behind which was the body of my wife. Immediately, I felt a cold feeling up and down my back as we heard coming out of the wall itself a horrible cry. For one short moment the officers stood looking at each other. Then quickly they began to pick at the stones, and in a short time they saw before them the body of my wife, black with dried blood and smelling of decay. On the body's head, its one eye filled with fire, its wide open mouth the color of blood, sat the cat, crying out its revenge.
That's our show for today. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with more stories from around the world.
For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.